Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, I can't get over it. So low, I can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, can't get over it. So low, can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Hello and welcome to this holy half hour here on 3TFM with me, the Reverend Alec Noble, Minister of Saltcoats North Parish Church. Thanks very much for joining us. It's good to have your company. And I'd like to introduce you to a good friend of mine, Mr. Neil Gibson. Neil is very well known in this area for lots of reasons. He's a Saltcoats resident. He's in the North Parish Church as a member. He was a big employer at one time. He's played in a band at the Dockers Club. He's played at local social clubs for many years, in church halls, at family weddings. Just about everybody will know Neil. And he's also the man who makes the CDs of our Holy Half Hour programmes. He's the man who makes the CDs of our Saltcoats North Parish Church Sunday services, which gets distributed far and wide. So I've long wanted to introduce you to Neil. He's a fascinating man with lots of stories to tell. And tonight's the night, because he is here right now with me in the studio. So thanks very much for coming, Neil. How are you tonight?
I'm very well, Alec, thank you. And thank you for all these lovely comments you've just made.
That's okay. You've got such a wide and varied life. I was wondering how to put it all together. So what we've decided to do is we'll take one strand of your life. So I'd like to present to the wider public Neil Gibson, the accordionist. So, Neil, tell us, how did you start playing the accordion?
Well, I was about 9 years old when I started and became very interested in playing the accordion. And this was at the latter years of the war. So I lived in war times. And about 1943, my mother acquired a wee accordion for me from Glasgow. Cost a few pounds, and I started practicing. I thought this was a marvellous thing to have. And there was a guy lived across the road, a wonderful man, and he heard me practicing one day, and he was a friend of my mother and father's, and he came over and he says, "I hear Neil practicing an accordion." And when he got the story, he says, "If I can help him in any way, because as you know, I'm an accordionist," he says, "I'll help him in any way I can. But I'm working in the factory, so he's got to come over after I finish my work." So needless to say, I was at my wee window in Ray Street, leaning out the window every night after school, watching for Alec coming up the road off the factory train. And if he gave me the nod and the wave, I knew that I could go across to his house after tea time and get a wee half hour's practice with him. About a year or so later, when I got the hang of it, Alec was showing me how to play the left and right hand together, which is the hardest bit about playing the accordion. But about a year or so after it, I was getting the hang of playing one or two songs, but not very well. But I had got one quite off by heart just at the time that the war finished. And they were having a big concert in the public school, which was a school that I went to all my life.
This is in Saltcoats.
Saltcoats Public School, yes. And the pupils were all being asked, "What can you do? Can you dance or sing?" And they were being kind of forced into coming to entertain the crowd. And of course, I thought I was great. And I says, "Oh, right, I'll be there." And away I went to this, my very first gig. And I had no case for my accordion, so it was over my shoulder, and I was swaggering along Argyll Road carrying this wee accordion. Place very busy because it was a big concert that was on, and when I get in, I nearly died when I saw the crowd that was there. But anyway, I get sorted up, I was introduced by the famous Sonny Crawford, who was the main man in the school. Great snooker player as well. I can say that now. I was introduced anyway, and the song that I played was Coming In on a Wing and a Prayer. Now, the accordion was limited because it only had 12 bass on the one side, which is just as hard to play as one with 120 bass, which I play now. But I started playing this, and the crowd had already been warned that everybody that was doing anything on that night or on that afternoon, they had to bring the house down for each person. So naturally, I got a big ovation for what I did, and they were all cheering and shouting. And Sonny Crawford says, "Well, you've heard the crowd. I would like you to play another tune." The problem was that I could only play one song properly, and that was Coming In on a Wing and a Prayer. So I had to play it again. So that was the end of that first wee part, my first gig, Salkett's Public School, and I finished up playing Coming In on a Wing and a Prayer.
So we're going to hear now your first track that you've picked, and well, that is Anne Shelton. She's the original artist.
She was the original person to record that song at the time.
So here she is singing Coming In on a Wing and a Prayer.
Was missing 2 hours overdue. One of our planes was missing with all its gallant crew. The radio sets were humming, they waited for the word. Then a voice broke through the humming, and this is what they heard. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Though there's one motor gone, we can still carry on. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. What a show, what a fight. Yes, we really hit our target for tonight. How we sing as we limp through the air. Look below, there's our field over there. With our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord, we're coming in on a wing and a prayer. How we sing as we limp through the air. Look below, there's our field over there. With our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord, we're coming in on a wing and a prayer.
I take it, Neil, that Coming in a Wing and a Prayer is a description of some of the aeroplanes coming back after the battles.
It is, yes. That's what Anne sings about that. There's a wee bit about it in the song. But it's just an appropriate song for the actual time that it was requested and played in the school. And of course it suited me fine because it was the only song I could play anyway. Back to Alec. Alec McBride, I always thought he was a great guy, and he became a lifelong friend to me. And he took me out to, once I got on a wee bit with the accordion, I used to love going to his house to practice, because I got the use of his big accordion. He had a big 120 bass accordion, and it was brilliant to sit with this accordion on. And that was one of the things that I longed to have, was this big new accordion. And that was probably one of the things that made me practice more. I eventually got one, but I played Alex while I was practicing, and that was a great thing. He took me out to hundreds of charity gigs that he did. It was engagements then, but they called them gigs now. It was we played at hundreds, and what I learned was there was always plenty of dancing and singing and people that came up to sing, just as they do in karaoke now. Alec was a great singer himself, and he was a compere, and he was a comedian. And any time that he was at any of the places that I played with him, 9 out of 10 times, he would be asked to sing. And one of the favourite songs that I'll always remember was he always sung A Gold Mine in the Sky.
So our next track, here it is. It's not sung by Alec McBride this time, though. This is your favourite group, is it?
Yep.
The Deep River Boys singing There's a Gold Mine in the Sky.
There's a gold mine in the sky, far away. We will find it, you and I, some sweet day. There'll be clover just for you down the line.
So you're saying to me off air that Alec McBride sang just like that.
He did, yes. Mm-hmm. He had that lovely ringing voice that was suitable for bad quality microphones that we had in these days, because it was hard to get anything that you could play through.
Yeah.
But
so what happens next in the rise to fame of Neil Gibson, the accordionist?
I moved on then, and I finally, because of my age, I got a job when I was just under 16, and I was waiting patiently to get into the railway booking office at Saltcoats and get to the college in Glasgow, Skerries College I went to learn bookkeeping. I just loved that, and it was only about 120 yards away from where I stayed, so I could practically fall out of bed, and I was at my work. Although I must say that I had a bike, and I went on my bike to my work, and it was only just down the road.
But at your work, you got free rail passes, which came in handy.
That's right.
Right?
I got to what was known as actual passes. You get so many passes in a year or 6 months, and then you get other concessions to go. So that let me take up some proper music lessons in Glasgow with a maestro, an accordion maestro, whom I was lucky enough to get in with. And he was up in St. Vincent Square, I think, St. Vincent Square, and his name was Tony Verisci. And he was somebody that, when you heard him playing, that was what you were aiming for, to try and be something like that. But I loved the lessons I got anyway. I must say that I didn't love them for the first year, because all I got was scales. And I was practicing scales and scales and scales, to the effect that I had four sisters and two brothers, and we all lived in a small house in Ray Street. And my sisters got a bit fed up with me sitting practicing every day. And it was agreed that every time there was no rain, I had to go way up the back door onto the grass and practice up there. And that's, I've got photographs of myself practicing up in the grass in Ray Street.
It's the same problem for bagpipers, I think.
Very same. I played the bagpipes as well.
Yeah.
And I think all these instruments follow one another.
So then you formed your own band, the Top Notes.
I formed the Top Notes, and we very shortly, when we started that, we had Alec McBride was in the band. He was now playing for me as an accordionist, and my brother was playing, Andy. And there was a guy in trumpet, his name was Alec Hare, and he went away to America. Hot Lips, they called him. Well, there was another popular guy in the band, and he played drums. His name was Ian Irvin, and he was very well known in the district. And he was, again, we were all self-taught, really. And Ian was a self-taught drummer who used to go around with a pair of drumsticks in his back pocket. The band was a bit more solid by that time. That was three accordion, trumpet and drums. We got a lot of gigs because we were becoming pretty good then. We were up probably to about 12 songs by that time. So you had to learn to play songs that you played the song for a dance, and then you played it again later on in a different key and a different tempo, and it was the same song. But that's what you did in these days. Well, we did anyway.
Was most of your work doing weddings?
We played at dances, weddings and concerts. That was about... It was then I was playing at a wedding in the British Legion Hall in Sydney Street that I fell in love with my now wife, Betty. And it was that was the girl I later married in February 57. And then later on, our son Neil was born, and he became an accomplished musician. And I recorded the famous song, "The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face," and that was for Betty.
So here's Neil himself singing for Betty, "The First Time I Ever Saw Your Face."
Thank you. like a trembling heart, a captive bird that was there.
Romance with Betty blossomed, and after you got married, and your son Neil. So tell us more about your relationship with Neil then, and your band.
Well, much later, I formed a new big sound band, and we called it Shindig. It was a dance band mainly, with a lot of cabaret in it, and I formed it with Neil Jr. and my nephew Gavin. Gavin played bass guitar, and Neil played lead guitar. Both of them could sing, and both of them became very good musicians. We played and sang all types of music for large and small functions. We played on and loved the island of Arran, where I used to go camping and whistling in my younger days. Betty and I have seen the island of Arran from our bedroom window for the past 50 years. So one night I says to Neil, "How about composing the music and playing me the backing music, and I'll write a song about Arran." So I wrote this song about Arran, and I think it describes this lovely island.
So here's Neil's words. His son, Neil, is playing the music, wrote the music. You recorded it in your band room, i.e. the bedroom.
Yep.
1984.
Did that.
And it's sung here by Tony Gray, who you often sang with your band, I understand.
Yep.
What's her real name?
Her real name's June Milligan. She comes from Ardrossan, and she became a professional singer, and she's now back at home again.
Where do I feel a true untold? Where do I feel a magic?
So Neil, tell us about your big social night at the MOD Police Club in Beath.
Well, I don't know if I'll get away with this, but we used to have some great fun and laughs at some of the special event nights, and we wrote a lot of comic songs to suit whatever night we were playing at. And one of these was a dinner dance up at the police club, at the MOD Police Club in Beath. It was a special retirement presentation, and it was a big wheel in the police force that was getting this presentation. I can't mention any names, of course. And there were many top brass present at this, and it was just, you can imagine, it was loaded with police. It was all policemen that were in the big hall. This was a comic song we used to play called the Polis Song. It was about a wee gang of kids who raided orchards and such to steal apples or anything else they could get in the gardens. So if you imagine this, I had six top Strathclyde policemen sitting in a circle of chairs on the dance floor wearing comic Polis hats with sweetie whistles in their mouths and plastic buttons. A few of the volunteers, as we'll call them, certainly did not want to be there, but the many ordinary police guests just loved to see them squirming. At the chorus of the song, the circus of Polis have to jump up, blow their sweetie whistles, wave their batons, and run round their chairs in circles till the chorus ends. And we do this at every verse. The audience loved it. So this is the Polis Song.
But you've changed apples to sewer plumes.
We had to change the apples, aye, to sewer plumes, because I had to get the words to rhyme better, and I used a few sewer plumes, the song's actually called, but we call it the Polis Song.
Beans and tell them where we were. It was the police running down the road. It
So that was your son, Neil, singing that as well.
Yeah. Singing and playing all the backing music, yeah. Everything.
Very good. So, Neil, thank you very much for coming into the studio and sharing all these special memories and tracks. I can see a lovely connecting thread through all of what you've said tonight. It's about encouraging, teaching, and inspiring one another. Your mother encouraged you to take up the accordion. Alec McBride, the man across the street, gave you free lessons and took you under his wing. Tony Verrecchi gave you further lessons in Glasgow. Betty, your wife, encouraged you, and you taught Neil, your son, and you worked together as a team with the words and the music and performing and recording together. And now, hopefully, the story still continues with this programme tonight. I hope it inspires, encourages others to go up and do things and to help others to get up and do things so that we can all enrich each other's lives. So thanks once again, Neil, and we leave you with Neil's parting thought. This is a song he loved to sing, and it's an interesting thought. Adam sinned because he didn't have a mammy to inspire, encourage, and teach him right from wrong. It's sung by the Deep River Boys, one of Neil's favourite singers.
I heard the old folks talking round my house the other night about Adam in the scriptures long ago. Now the lady folks, they abused him, said they knowed it wasn't right. And of course the men folks, they all said that so. Now I felt sorry for Mr. Adam, and I felt like butting in, 'cause I know more than they do all about what made Adam sin. For Adam never had no mommy for to take him on her knee to teach him right from wrong and show him things he ought to see. I know down in my heart that he'd let that apple be. But Adam never had no dear old mommy. Adam never had no childhood round the old log cabin door. He never had no good old southern life. He started in a great big grown-up man, and what is more, he never had the right kind of a wife. Now just suppose he'd had a mommy when that tempting did begin, and she had come and told him, son, don't you eat that, it's a sin. But for to take him on her knee to teach him right from wrong and show him things he ought to see. I know down in my heart that he'd let that out.